And hello from Sydney. Welcome to the Proof of Concept podcast, the tech show where we explore real-life use cases from the field and discuss some of the hot questions in the field of data science and AI. I am your host, Grant Case, and today we're joined by John Blick. John is the Associate Director of Innovation and Partnerships at NAB and the author of two books, Digital Twins, The Next Human Revolution That Will Disrupt the Financial Services Industry, and recently released Metaverse and Financial Services, both available on both Kindle Unlimited and Amazon. So welcome to the podcast, John.
Thanks very much, Grant. Pleasure to be here with you today.
So I thought I would set up today's discussion about one of the topics that you're most interested in and have published about, and that's digital twins. So recently, it was an GPT-3, the AI deep learning algorithm that's out there, was let loose on a new language. And based upon its ability to understand existing languages and now a new language, it was able to make some inference on what, in effect, what new sets of languages and writing functions for a language it had never understood or never even seen. And I thought that might be interesting to bring into this particular discussion today, because when we talk about digital twins, or perhaps I'll let you introduce it, it has a lot, there's a lot of overlap. And to be fair, we're going to be a little futuristic today on the podcast about what that might entail for all of us a little bit later on. So we like to kick off things about what's cool about digital twins. So why don't you at least kind of help the audience understand a little bit about when we say digital twins, what do we mean, and why this is going to be such a compelling and interesting facet for us going forward?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Grant. I'll probably start by anchoring the conversation into what is a digital twins today. It's not a new technology. It's been around for about three decades. And basically, a digital twin is a digital representation of a physical asset. And the reason why it's compelling is because you can actually start creating that virtual representation of your asset, and you can start stress testing your asset and understand how it behaves according to certain scenarios. And the main advantage is that you can predict failure, so you can anticipate it and you can remediate before it fails. The best example I can give you is if you are managing energy plants, such as a nuclear plant, the last thing you want is to stop your nuclear plant because you have to change a part. So having a digital twin of your nuclear plant, understand to predict failure, understand how you should optimize its production, how you should optimize maintenance, and so on and so on. So really started about three decades ago in the heavy industry space. But what is absolutely fascinating is that from heavy industry, there's now applications into humans. So now we actually do have the technology to fully replicate you and create a digital twin of who you are. And we are going to explore the consequences of this, I suppose.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So let's talk a little bit about, sorry, I'm getting some feedback. Hold on one second. Okay. So let's talk a little bit about kind of delving a little bit into what the future of digital twins really is. So one of the concepts in your books you talk about when you're talking about digital twins is the thought of consciousness. So what we're doing today, my thought process, how I interact, how with the world, the context of which I bring decision-making, being able to replicate that and what that might entail. So this has vast potential ways to impact us as a society. So can you talk a little bit about what you believe some of the benefits of those digital twins will be for us going forward?
Absolutely. So probably starting with how it's unveiling. So we have the technology today to replicate how you look like. It's not easy, but it's highly doable. So you can create a digital avatar that looks like you, exactly like you. And this digital avatar on a screen like today between you and I where we're operating, this digital avatar can actually start picking up the micro expression of your face and answer your question, the question you may have, not only rationally, but also send you emotional signals and visual cues to send you the message that it understands what you are saying. What's really important here is 80% of the communication is actually nonverbal. So that technology is incredibly powerful when it comes to customer engagement or client engagement. But that's just for the physical representation of you as an avatar. And that's going to be incredibly helpful when we'll be talking about metaverse at some point. But it's not what's interesting. What's really interesting is that who you are can be digitally replicated. And by who you are, I mean the way you think. Because if you think about it, you are the byproduct of your emotions. You are the byproduct of your experience. You are the byproduct of your education. You are the byproduct of the environment you grew up in and evolved in. And all of that shape your thinking. And that thinking can be digitally replicated. Now, the consequences of that are absolutely massive, because think about a world where, and a world we already operate within, where your physical presence is not needed, where you can work remotely absolutely all the time. Creating a digital twin of your expertise means that you can actually start putting that expertise available online 24/7. And the digital you can actually start representing yourself in the digital economy. And the digital you becomes a way for you to generate income. And that would become a key asset. And the book is articulated around that. And what are the consequences for us as a society, but also looking deeply at what are the consequences for the financial services value chain.
No, I think that's also one of the interesting things about when we talk about this. This isn't science fiction. So when we talk about machine learning models, what are machine learning models learning from? They're learning from, in effect, all of the transactions, all of the different decisions that have been made. When we think about even language, these are the sorts of, we're just in effect taking lots and lots of data and applying that. One of the keys, I came across an article by Garry Kasparov, the former world champion chess manager or chess grandmaster. He talked a lot about kind of AI being this, you have to expose it to a lot of data, but the human intelligence is really building the context. And together, both of those make that incredibly powerful. So when we talk about what we're talking about with digital twins, we're really talking, how do we get that next level, that context? If I can take my set of decision-making, what happens then? So what happens to me when Grant Case could have, I could take everything of Grant Case and now I can be making decisions without even being there. What does that, how does that impact us?
It's absolutely a fundamental shift. But just to double down on one point you made, this is not science fiction. Like some of the audience can think, oh, those guys are talking about 20 years, 30 years down the track. It's not. There's a company called Merlin AI, and they are exactly in that business of creating digital twins of who you are, and they're replicating your professional expertise. They are going as far as having a digital twin temp agency where you can actually register and they will find work for you, for your digital twin across the world. So it's not necessarily at scale today, but think about it from your perspective. And think about it from the perspective of a society, of an advanced society. Western world, if you look at the ratio of service versus production in GDPs, 76% of the GDP is actually service-driven. So it means that people like you, Grant, or people like me, we do not produce anything material or anything tangible. Mm-hmm. We only produce ideas. And those ideas materialize into processes, into products, into services, and generate money. But if I can replicate that digitally, and my employers or my multitude of employers can benefit from my expertise, from my digital twin, then physical John or physical Grant can spend the time, their time, their physical time doing something else.
I'm going to sit I'm going to be right behind that in that swimming pool behind you. That's where I'm going to be. But that also brings up an interesting point, because in our kind of free talk, we talked about this concept of what happens if, in effect, you know, Grant Case, digital twin, the internet never forgets is the meme I always talk about. We're talking about my consciousness, this context being, basically living in perpetuity. What does that mean from us we talk a lot about things such as copyright, artists who have died, the ability of their heirs to basically continue to monetize music, songs, books, far beyond the life of the existing individual. What happens when everybody can do that, I guess, is a good question.
Yeah. I think there's no answer to this at this stage, but there's a need for an answer, and there's a need for an answer pretty quickly. Because fundamentally, that's in our lifetime, we are going to experience the emergence of digital assets, and ownership of digital assets would be a key question. How do you protect your IP, or how do you make it open source? You may decide that your expertise might benefit the world and you don't want to monetize it and therefore offer it to the world. Or you might decide that actually your expertise is part of your digital legacy for your kids and you want to protect this. But there's no legal framework for this. I guess the closest is the one that you've described around musical rights or artists passing away and leaving the right to their heirs to monetize their IP.
Yeah, but I guess an interesting question really for me when it comes down to this is, we were talking in our pre-meeting about. What happens when we have, let's say Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos, Bill Gates have, we're sitting 30 years down the road and effectively their consciousness decide to come together and we're going to create a new product. Who owns that at this point? Yeah. And again, this isn't science fiction. I mean, if you'd asked somebody 20 years ago, will we be able to read every language and translate to every language? Would we be able to do with DALL-E and being able to basically give it a set of instructions and it's building art? People would be thinking, yeah, that's pretty far out there, but we're talking about the same sort of thing here, right?
We are. And look, I think I'm an eternal optimistic. So my only hope is that this technology is actually used for the greater good. Mm-hmm. Think about it from this perspective. If we could digitize the knowledge, the experience, and the consciousness of the greatest minds who have ever walked the earth, I'm thinking Mahatma Gandhi, I'm thinking Nelson Mandela, I'm thinking Nikola Tesla, I'm thinking Albert Einstein, and have them digitally present to help guide humanity in terms of crisis. We got a climate crisis, and we are just starting to understand what should we be doing. Hey, what about we use modern science and modern technology enhanced by the consciousness of and the expertise of those great minds to throw resources and try to find a solution. That's an option. And I hope that's the way society will use these sort of technologies. But on the same token, we cannot disregard the fact that it could be used for hegemony mm-hmm. or commercial dominance. That's a possibility as well.
So my next question really is, how does that impact us on a day-to-day basis? So one of the things you talked about in your books and financial services, how is this going to change and affect, industry of it itself? How are we as, digital workers, how is this going to effectively change our life? You talked a little bit about that in your book. Can you kind of relay kind of what you see as what that might look like?
Sure. So I'll actually start with the fundamentals of the financial services industry, which are actually at risk with this emerging technology. If you boil down banking and insurance to one assumption, it is the following. It exists because people like you and me value and want to own physical assets. Therefore, you need access to finance to acquire those assets, and you need insurance to protect those assets. Now, shift that assumption from people are going to own and value physical assets to people are going to own and value digital assets. The entire value chain collapses. And now think forward into this world where you can replicate yourself and that digital you is generating your income. You don't care about your house. You don't care about your vehicles. You don't care about all the material stuff that you've acquired. The only thing you want to finance and protect is your digital twin, because your digital twin operates on your behalf and constitute a source of income through thousands of interactions 24/7 all across the world.
I think in general, when we talk about this, I think about workman's compensation or, some sort of injury insurance, right? Typically, I would take that out because I myself can't deal with that, right? If I am somehow disabled, I can't continue to work. If I have long-term disability insurance, what we're talking about here, what does that mean for in the digital realm? What constitutes a long-term disability for my digital twin? Is it the shift and change of an asset? Is it a shift and a change of the way things work? How does that impact?
Yeah. So look, this one of the impact could be that's especially relevant for the insurance industry. They would have to figure out a way to create algorithmic insurance product whereby they are saying, I certify that the knowledge, the experience, the expertise of Digital John is actually grounded into some form of proof points. And therefore, if Digital John is being hacked and Digital John cannot generate revenue for Physical John, then here's an insurance product. So that's a very concrete use case of what could be a mechanism of protection for your digital asset.
Mm-hmm. And what about and we talk a lot about digital assets. I think digital insurance products is a whole new ball of wax for everybody. It is. But if we're talking about digital assets, this is something that we're starting to see now. So if we start talking about NFTs and we start talking about cryptocurrency, Bitcoin, etc., it's not as if this whole concept of digital assets, it's here now. So I guess my question to you is, what will fundamentally change about, just in general us when we talk about just assets? So if we're talking about asset allocation, obviously people, watch up in cryptocurrency go up and down, but typically that's because there is no it's fiat currency and that it's ascribed to whatever the value is. Now we have a digital asset that effectively can create a revenue stream. Hmm. whereas, Bitcoin is what I'm willing to pay for it in the open market. Yeah. Now it's Grant case context and thoughts and ideas that I can now produce and send to work, for example.
Yeah. And I guess the fundamental distinction is the digital assets that we know today, being NFTs, being cryptocurrencies and so on, are highly speculative, versus your digital twin will be a very stable asset generating income. And the beauty of it is you can enhance its value, not through speculation, but through transaction of IP modules. I'll give you an example. I work in innovation and I'm a strategist by background. I'm not a technologist. My job is to understand how technology can marry up with emerging human needs and the financial services industry. But I have zero expertise when it comes to technology. I have zero expertise when it comes to applying technology, like writing code, don't know how to do this. But think about it from this perspective. I can enhance my digital twin with my IP by borrowing yours or getting access to it.
Oh, wow.
you have the credentials in that space. Grant, what about I get access to your artificial intelligence module so that I can enhance my own IPs with yours? And maybe I do have an IP module that is of interest for you. Shall we trade? Shall we swap? And not only by doing this, we are doing two things. We are enhancing us as humans, but we also enhancing our digital versions. And we are cross-pollinating and creating those not perfect digital entities, but we are creating something which is incredibly valuable and which is completely fit for purpose. Like, I want to download the latest French-speaking module because I noticed that 85% of my recent take-up are actually in the French native-speaking world. So digital twin, apply my knowledge into French. Nothing stops us from thinking that this could be the case. That is not speculative. It is enriching a very stable assets which you own and which generates most of your revenue.
I think the Matrix and Neo basically downloading. I know Kung Fu.
I know Kung Fu. How much is it?
Yeah.
We could use crypto or digital currency as a way to exchange those modules, but that will remain the speculative assets in the service of the stable one.
Yeah. That to me becomes the wild part of this is, all right, and if we even look at culture and history, where have a lot of the biggest advances in civilization have come? When two civilizations have come together and started to exchange a set of technologies with each other, that's where the explosion starts to happen. So, being in the innovation space, I got to imagine the concept and ideas of cross-pollination, and instead of taking, it could be if two professors work together in a university, it could be a decade before they come together. Now we're talking about two digital assets built on the foundation of scaling of the internet, being able to generate that so much more quickly. And by the way, if you have any interest and excitement as I do in this, please follow us on LinkedIn and drop your comments here on YouTube, because I love talking to you, John. You always blow my mind in this sort of thing.
Awesome. And I hope your audience is also getting interested.
Yeah. So I guess the last thing, we talk a lot about when we're talking about this, there's a huge potential change in terms of asset distribution. There's also the ability, we talk a lot about Dataiku, we talk about responsible AI, we talk about AI governance. The whole concept and idea of a long-lived asset in this case, what happens to us as a society? We already have income inequality. What happens in effect when we start to, let's say, my heirs decide to sell my digital twin to a collective, right? Are we not, you know, isn't there the possibility that we start to concentrate and create even more income inequality? But now it's not just income inequality. It's now, for lack of a better term, brain power or context as a part of this. If we're taking, if I can take, the next Albert Einstein or the next Tesla and I start bringing them together, aren't we going to exacerbate a lot of what we're talking about today?
Yeah, it's very likely. It's very likely, and the fact that you guys are centered around ethics, AI ethics, and responsibility is the right way forward, because all of that needs to be asked. All those questions need to be asked. Do we have the weapon of mass destruction to actually increase that inequality when it comes to access to knowledge and access to financial means? The only reason why I'm speaking with you today, Grant, is because I was lucky enough to be born in a rich country and to have the means to go to get an education that gave me an entry point into the workforce, which gave me an entry point into enhancing my experience, my knowledge, and so on and so on. So creating that great cycle for me, but I'm very conscious that I'm part of the lucky few. So ethics is absolutely at the center, should be absolutely at the center of those conversations. But on the same token, like, you could decide to, there's charity, there's fundraisers. You can use your IP as a way to elevate people who were not lucky as you were. That's mm-hmm. absolutely, and I think that's going to be up to us. Yeah. There's another fundamental point to potentially consider. It's almost impossible to predict the future, but you're talking about digital twin, digital IP for perpetuity. I don't think that's going to hold true, because context is absolutely everything. And intelligence applied in context generate value. The context you operate within will not be true in 50 years. So digital John in 50 years will not be adapted to the reality of that time, because the mental framework of digital John would be anchored in the 2000s. So at some point, digital twin might die because of irrelevance, or could actually morph into something different, because they could morph into and augment the digital twins of our heirs and become relevant in that time. That's massive unknown.
And again, I think that in our discussion before this, I found it interesting. And one of the things we talked about was you mentioned the concept and idea of perhaps, a great grandfather or a grandfather entrepreneur that would be there to, in effect, kind of give advice to their legacy, to, their grandchildren, their great grandchildren. When we're talking about an asset, there's both the implicit and the explicit value associated with it. So obvious, my grandmother passed away in 2020 and I love her to death and I miss her every day. But if I could basically, her knowledge, she was a nurse for 50 years. Her knowledge today as a nurse is not relevant, because she stopped nursing 15 years ago now. But being able to talk to someone, like that, to me becomes, if I give what's the humanity and what's the upside and, what's the good of what a lot of this could be, is the ability in essence to, live on in that sense, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's the ability to live on. But I think to one of your points, it raises a question which is hyper relevant for organizations when it comes to decision making. Mm-hmm. So your example of a grandfather being an entrepreneur and just still not being alive but being digitally present to advise his grandkids running the business. Raises a question. What is the role that those technologies or those digital humans will play? And what is going to be the power shifts? So we all we live in a world where as people leader, we lead physical humans, mm-hmm. and we lead digital humans, and we lead hybrids. So one of the key questions is, how do you train your workforce, your human workforce, to be relevant in a world where you have to deal with humans and machines? And who overrides who? Is the machine overriding the human decision, or is the human always overriding the machine? Or what? Where is the boundary? And that applies as well in a family context. You may be dead and still be valued and still be leading decisions or advising. But your heirs also have the right to say, hey, shut up, granddad, you're dead.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So that to me, and that to me is one of the interesting things about all of this, is the ethics, the how things might play out as a part of all of this. It's a fascinating ideas, and typically we talk about predictions, but I almost don't even want to talk about predictions. But what's the it's not necessarily what's going to happen in 10, 15, 20 years, but what's going to happen in the next 2 to 3 in your mind with all of this?
It's really interesting because in my line of work, I'm always being asked, well, that sounds far in the future. So when is that becoming a problem or an opportunity for us? And my answer is always the same. My answer is, it's not in the future. It's already there. It's just not at scale, or it's not evenly distributed, but it's already there. So what will it mean in the next 2 or 3 years? It's still very early stage, and I think it will grow into niches, into very, very specific areas for which the technology is actually hyper-relevant today. I'll give you one example. In financial services, heavily regulated industry, anti-money laundering, fraud mitigations are a massive problem. It's a massive problem. And it turns out that because it's heavily regulated, it's actually easier to replicate human knowledge and transfer that to a machine that can deal with a lot of volumes, where the humans are actually going to spend most of their time working on high value, hyper complex space. So it's likely to grow in those kind of niche. There's entire areas of industries which are already at risk, thinking especially in customer facing roles, call centers, where it's already being used, where machines are dealing with most
AI
of the
AI assistants and AI, that sort of thing.
AI, but which is great because you could easily assume that 80% of the volumes which are being received in a call center are actually always the same. It's low value, it's high volume, and it gives the opportunity for the human to spend meaningful time with customers, answering them on or advising them on complex problems, where human interaction is actually still going to be the go-to. But I think, going back to my earlier point, I think it's going to start in and scale in niche. And once the technology gets better and better and there's an adoption, it's going to move into more complex spaces.
Awesome. And I am fascinated by this entire, because you hit like all of the interesting aspects. You're talking about the future, financial services, crypto, digital twins. It's like you're not a technologist, which is the fascinating part about this, John. Is like to me, that is, it shows a lot of what's going to be necessary in the next 20 years. There's so much value in everyone and their expertise, whether that's a digital me or it's me myself. So I want to thank you for the conversation, and I want to thank everyone here on the Proof of Concept podcast. Please, if you have thoughts and opinions here, we'd love to hear them. Please follow us on LinkedIn. Drop some comments on YouTube. Take care. Thanks. Thank you, John. Please pick up his two books, The Digital Twins, the Human Revolution That Will Disrupt the Services Industry, and also Financial Services and the Metaverse. So thank you so much, John, and take care, everybody.
Thanks very much, Grant. Take care.